Well, I heard about a pastor who announced in worship that the church board would meet immediately following worship over in the next room. They'd meet, and so when worship was over, the church board gathered over there, but there was a stranger there, somebody that was a visitor in worship that day. He'd never been there before, and so the pastor went to him and said, you know, I must not have been clear. I'm sorry, friend. I must not have been clear. But this meeting is just for the church board. And the visitor replied, yes, but after that sermon we all just heard, I figured I was as bored as anyone else. That doesn't have anything to do with the sermon today. Let's hope not anyway. What does have to do with the sermon today is the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God. When Jesus talked about the kind of life that was good, a blessed life, a life with God, he used kingdom language, often used kingdom language. He talked about the kingdom of God as if it was something that was available and here and near to people. And he talked about the kingdom of God as if it was a beautiful thing. The kingdom of God is like a feast. It's like a banquet, he would say. Sometimes he would say, it's like things like yeast that grows among us slowly and expands in ways we don't know or understand. Or like a mustard seed that's small but then grows into something great that we're all thankful for. Kingdom language. And if you were here a few weeks ago, you heard me say that when Jesus and John the Baptist talked about the kingdom of God, that they were not talking about a political entity here on earth, nor were they talking about something off in the future or up in the skies. They were talking about something that was available to us now as we live our lives under God's rule. In other words, when we live according to God's ways, when we embrace the ways and means of God, the ethics of God, the laws and the rules of God, when we live under that, then the kingdom becomes a reality right around us in our own space. And when you live that way and I live that way and our spaces bump up against each other, the kingdom of God, see, expands in that way. And the slide says the kingdom of God is what Jesus spoke about according to Mark and Luke. In Matthew's gospel, the term is the kingdom of heaven, or sometimes the kingdom of the heavens. We think it's probably the same thing. It's possible that Jesus used different terms, but we think it's just that Mark and Luke recorded it as kingdom of God, Matthew as kingdom of the heavens. Now, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount that's in Matthew's gospel explains about the kingdom, explains a lot about what life in God's kingdom looks like, or what a good life looks like is a way we might say it. It explains who that life is available to. It talks about who has access to this kingdom life, this good life, this blessed life. The Sermon on the Mount, it's the longest recorded sermon of Jesus that we have. Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is where we find it. Matthew 5, 6, and 7. It's probably the most studied passage in all the Christian scriptures, probably the most quoted from, and I'm going to preach from that sermon today and the next two Sundays. Okay, Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Today, what I want to point out is what Jesus says about the availability of this good kingdom life. How do we access it? Who has access to it? Who is it possible for? So our text today is about who gets included in this good kingdom life. Or another way we could say it is, to whom is the kingdom of God available? Or finally, the way Matthew records it, we could say, who is truly blessed? So Jesus is talking about the beginning of the sermon. Who is truly blessed? To whom is this kingdom available? Now, when we think of people that are truly blessed, that really have the good life, are truly blessed, we usually think of people that are wealthy, full head of hair, maybe are thin and in shape, you know, that kind of thing. We think of those kinds of people. And don't you think that's right? They have health. Maybe sometimes we think of those who are famous or powerful or have been successful. Sometimes we think of those who have a lot of friends or a good, strong family. But mostly those people that we would think of have things or are gifted or something like that. Who are the people that you think of that are truly blessed? Would that be one? That guy? Blessed with good looks, at least. How about her? Would you say she is truly blessed? I think blessed with talent. Do you know who this guy is? Warren Buffett, one of the wealthiest people in the world. We would say he is blessed. A lot of people would. How about that guy? He's blessed. At least he's blessed a lot of Patriots fans over the last decade. Made him look that way. Here's another one we might think of when we think of someone who is truly blessed. Truly blessed. And that, how'd that guy get in there? With the exception of that last one, at least, these are the types of people we think of when we think of those who are truly blessed, who have somehow, in some ways, found what's good in life. These are the types of people. But Jesus surprises us with his answer to the question, who is truly blessed? Who gets included in this good life of the kingdom of God? Let's read what he says. I'm going to start at the end of chapter 4 in Matthew's gospel, which gives the context of the sermon. It kind of shows us what was happening and how it's set up. And then I'll read into the first part of the sermon of chapter 5 up to verse 12. So, the end of chapter 4. And I'm reading from the King James this morning. As I worked with this sermon over the last couple of weeks, the language, I think, of the Beatitudes are so familiar to us that the newer translations can be distracting. So I'm just going to read from the King James Version this morning. Matthew chapter 4, starting with verse 23. And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria. And they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with divers diseases, you gotta like that one, and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had palsy, and he healed them. And there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee and from Decapolis and from Jerusalem and from Judea and from beyond Jordan. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be glad, and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." Who is blessed? Not just the good-looking, the wealthy, and the healthy, or the famous, but also those we might not think of as blessed. They, too, get included, welcomed into the kingdom of God, this good life, this blessed life in the kingdom of God. This section of the Sermon on the Mount, this blessed are, is usually called, you know what it's called? Some of you get a free ticket to our next meal or something. Beatitudes, right? Beatitudes, it's a Latin word, beatitudo, that just means blessing. So that's what we've named it, after the Latin word of blessing. The Greek word that's translated blessed here, sometimes translated happy, has much more meaning. It implies well-being. It implies wholeness, being at peace and at rest because everything is set right. You're blessed because everything is in right relationship to each other. And everyone is in right relation to God. That's the blessed meaning here. That's what's happening. And what Jesus is teaching is that this blessed life, this good life in the kingdom, is available to even people in these conditions that he names. So this morning, what I want to talk about is three ways that this passage has traditionally been understood. Three interpretations, if you will. And I want to eventually argue for the third interpretation as most helpful and energizing, but I hope that by looking at this passage in these three different ways, you'll find a way that will help you understand this teaching of Jesus's, how it could be good news. How it could be good news for us. Good news of the kingdom, which is what Matthew says Jesus was preaching. All right? So let's think about three ways to understand this passage. Here's the first one. The first way. Some have taught that Jesus was saying that the people in these conditions he named would be blessed in the future. That they were maybe meek and poor in spirit and persecuted now, but hang in there because you're going to be blessed in the future. And that makes sense of the verbs. You know, the verbs that say, they shall be comforted. They shall inherit the earth. They will receive. They will be called children of God. It makes sense of the verbs to think that the blessing is in the future. And it also makes sense of some of the conditions that Jesus names that we don't think of as blessed. You know, we usually don't think of somebody who's poor in spirit as blessed. Poor in spirit, probably meaning spiritually destitute. The Common English Bible translates that as hopeless. You don't usually think of people that are hopeless as blessed, right? Or those who are mourning. Can you imagine someone who's mourning the death of a spouse or a child and telling them, you're so blessed? We wouldn't say that. Or how about this? Imagine your daughter coming home from college and she tells you, Mom and Dad, I have great news. I have great news. I'm engaged to be married. You're going to love him. You're going to love this fiance of mine. He is so meek. I just love his meekness. You're going to love that about him. We don't say that kind of thing. We don't think about some of these terms as conditions in which we would say people are blessed. We don't. And I doubt we ever think them. And one of the things I can't get out of my head anytime I read this sermon is the picture or the scene from the movie Life of Brian, Monty Python. Just raise one little finger and let me know if you've seen this. I totally don't recommend it, by the way. But there's a scene in which Jesus is giving the Sermon on the Mount in this movie. And the people are spread out over the hill, and there's a little valley between what you can see on the screen and the people that are in the scene. And they have a hard time hearing Jesus. And one of them says to the other one, blessed are the cheesemakers. Why would he say the cheesemakers are blessed? And her spouse says, well, I don't think he meant just the cheesemakers specifically, but rather the makers of all dairy products in general. And then she hears, blessed are the Greek. Why are the Greek? What's the Greek blessed? And her husband corrects her and says, no, the meek are blessed. And she goes, oh, good. I'm so happy for them. They don't usually get anything. They have such a hard time of it. And see, I think we instinctively know that some of these conditions aren't ones where we think the people are blessed. The meek, those who are persecuted. Who wants to be persecuted? I think we know that. So a common interpretation of the Beatitudes has been to say that Jesus was saying such people who were in all these conditions would be blessed and happy in the future as a kind of reward for the way they were suffering right now. They look at verse 12, 5 chapter 12. Great is your reward in heaven. And they think of heaven as something off in the clouds in the future. And so they say, you're going to be blessed. You're going to be happy later on. Even though you're hopeless or grieving or persecuted right now, your day's coming when you'll get yours. And you're blessed because of that. And that is good news in a way. It's always good news to find relief from suffering, even if it's the promise of relief from suffering in the future. Sometimes the promise of future relief is the only thing that keeps us hanging on and enduring through hopelessness or grief or persecution. So Jesus may have meant that people would be blessed in the future, even though they suffer now, which isn't a bad thing or a bad way of thinking about this sermon. And perhaps that's part of what Jesus was saying. But I don't think it was all he was saying. I don't think it was all that he meant. And that leads me to note another way in which Jesus' Beatitudes have been interpreted and understood. A second way, a common way that they've been interpreted, is as a prescription for behavior. A prescription for behavior. In other words, some have taught that Jesus was saying people are blessed because they are in these conditions. They're blessed because they are poor in spirit, because they're mourning, meek, pure in heart, seeking justice, or peacemakers, or persecuted and reviled. Therefore, this interpretation teaches that we should strive to become all these conditions that Jesus names. We should strive to become poor in spirit, meek, pure in heart, and so on. That if we become these things, we'll actually find this good and blessed life. We'll become blessed. Now, one reason that this interpretation is so common is that there are some of the things on the list of these conditions that we think of as good, right? We think of pure in heart as something that's good. We think of peacemakers as something that's good. They're called the children of God, after all. Wouldn't we want to be called the children of God? Hungering, thirsting for righteousness, or probably a better translation here would be justice. It's good to hunger for justice and to want what's right. Those seem to be good conditions to be in, and those conditions are praised in other biblical passages. So the teaching about this is that we should strive to become these conditions that Jesus names, and then we'll be blessed. So some have taught that getting into these conditions that Jesus names is the way we find blessing, a key to the truly good life, a key to the kingdom of God. And so lots of Christians have been told, become poor in spirit, become grieving, mourning, become all these things, so on. And that somehow when you become these conditions, you'll find the truly blessed life. You'll find life in the kingdom of God. And what people say that interpret them this way is they say, look, Jesus turned things upside down. In the kingdom of God, Jesus said, the last become first. The servants become the greatest. The least become the most. And what Jesus is telling is something is counterintuitive to us here. If we become poor in spirit, you're going to be surprised with God's blessing. And being surprised with God's blessing is always a good thing. A good thing. That's good news. But I'm not sure that it's what Jesus was teaching either. At least all of it. And the truth is that either one of these interpretations, that we'll be blessed in the future, or that becoming some of these conditions might end up with blessing, there's good things about both of those interpretations. And perhaps the best interpretation of the Beatitudes incorporates parts of each of them. But I want to note a third way to understand what Jesus is teaching here in these Beatitudes. Third way, and it's not original to me, Dallas Willard, the one that John mentioned this morning, is one that's interpreted this way, Jürgen Moltmann in the past. Many theologians, of course, have been interpreted this way. And here's a third way to understand what Jesus is teaching, and it's based on an understanding of Jesus' fundamental message. The fundamental message of Jesus was that the kingdom, God's kingdom, is here, now, and available to everyone who relies on Jesus himself. Let me say it again. Jesus' fundamental message, God's kingdom is here, now, available. We have access to it to everyone who relies on Jesus himself. Everyone who trusts in the Jesus way, the Jesus truth, and the Jesus life. And the Beatitudes teach this by saying that even the ones we wouldn't think could be called blessed or have access to this life do. The Beatitudes teach this by saying that even those who, according to human standards, are beyond the possibility of God's blessing or not likely to be included in God's kingdom or who cannot in their condition possibly be considered blessed can, in fact, be blessed, included in kingdom life, be happy because God's care and provision is available to them. Available to them, even them. The poor in spirit, the meek, the persecuted, and so on are examples of people to whom the kingdom is near and available, people for whom a blessed life is possible. We might not think that a blessed life is possible for people in some of these conditions, but Jesus is saying, yes, even for them, they can get in on this blessed life, this blessing of God in the kingdom. Here's Jesus's point. If God's blessing and kingdom are available to people in these conditions, it's available to everyone. Everyone who would embrace Jesus. Remember, Jesus had crowds of people following him from across the region, following him around because he'd been announcing the good news of the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom, the King James says, and healing people. And those people who had been following him around and who were gathering around him to hear his sermon were not being given, I don't think, a ticket for blessing in the future. They were being blessed right then. Jesus was healing them and teaching them, and as they came to him and were in his presence, they were being blessed. The blind were getting sight, the lame were walking, the deaf were hearing, the sick were getting better. Anyone who would come to Jesus was becoming blessed right then, not in the future. So Jesus is using the ones most people would never call blessed to show that everyone is invited into God's care and provision. That this kingdom is available to all who will embrace it by embracing Jesus himself. And I'm not talking about just hugging Jesus, but embracing the way, the Jesus way, the Jesus truth, and the Jesus life. So, those who are spiritually destitute or hopeless, those who are meek, those who are hoping for justice, which, by the way, are usually the ones who've been denied justice, those who are merciful, perhaps even to the point of being taken advantage of, being taken advantage of, or those who were reviled because they were pure in heart. Goody two-shoes. Most of us don't like goody two-shoes. Or those who everyone hates because they're peacemakers and won't take a side. And those who are harassed because they did what was right. All of these, as they see the kingdom of Jesus, enter it, and learn to live in it, they find themselves blessed, at peace, things set right. They find the life that's good. They find the kingdom of God, or as we say it sometimes, they just find Jesus. Dallas Willard pictured Jesus pointing at some of the people that he had just healed while he was giving this sermon. He pictured Jesus perhaps walking around because Matthew tells us that Jesus just healed all these people, that Jesus walked around and said, blessed is that guy who was spiritually destitute and hopeless. Blessed is this woman who was so meek everybody took advantage of her. Blessed is this one who couldn't walk, and this one who couldn't see, and this one who'd been sick for 12 years, they're all blessed because God's blessing is available to each of them. God's kingdom was available to each of them. They're all blessed because God's love, care, provision, and presence is here for them too. And when they welcome this kingdom, this person of Jesus into their lives, Dallas Willard writes, that is enough to allow them to enjoy a blessed and happy life. And they experience an unshakable security in which they cannot be harmed. Friends, sometimes we find ourselves in conditions that we can never think of as blessed. But the message in the Beatitudes was that God is available and God is enough to meet us in whatever state or condition we find ourselves. And that, friends, is good news. I find it to be extraordinarily good news. Who can be called blessed? Who has the good life? To whom is the kingdom of God available? Anyone. Anyone who learns to embrace the Jesus way, the Jesus truth, the Jesus life. God's blessing is available to the rich and to the poor, to the skinny and to the fat, to the young and the old, to the perfumed and the bad smelling, to the short and to the tall, to the brown, black, white, Jew or Greek, male or free, female, slave or free. They're all riotously celebrated in the party of Jesus. That's the kingdom of God. That is good news.